Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Pulpits. Before we get started with our show today, I want to give you a couple of announcements. First off, we are in the season of Lent, and Holy Week and Easter are approaching, and we are definitely holding that time in the tension that it is. Part of our podcast, we are also interviewing folks that are recipients of the One Great Hour of Sharing offering. This offering is typically received on Easter or Palm Sunday, but you can receive it any time of the year. And so we're really excited to share with you the impact that this offering has by showcasing some of the fantastic work that is being done with funds received. So let's sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Well, I am back again with another episode of Between Two Pulpits with my co-host, John. Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, Katie, doing great and very excited about today's conversation.
Yeah, today we have Susan Crable with us. So, hey, Susan, how are you?
Hi, Katie. Good to be with you today.
We're excited because we've been lifting up all of the different partners that are supported by One Great Hour of Sharing in this kind of part of our season, I guess you could say, of the Between Two Pulpits podcast. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what the work is that you do for the PCUSA?
Thanks. My name is Susan Crable again. I'm the Associate for Migration Accompaniment Ministries, which is part of Presbyterian Disaster Assistance, then the Presbyterian Mission Agency. And this is an area of our work focused on people on the move. So I am responsible for helping lead our response as a denomination to humanitarian responses and advocating for the rights and services for people who are migrating, primarily those who are migrating for humanitarian reasons, those who feel compelled or forced to leave their homelands, and that includes services here in the United States, as well as partners we have around the world.
That's great, Susan. Listeners, I'm particularly excited today to talk with Susan. I've just come back from a trip to the Texas-Mexico border, and Susan and I have already debriefed that trip a little bit. So I think the importance and significance and urgency of her work and the work she does on all of our behalf is very timely and very important. So Susan, maybe tell us a little bit about how you got into this work and how you were called to your current position.
I started this work actually over 30 years ago. I've only been in the denomination since 2014, in the denominational office, I should say, since 2014. But I started because I was working at the local level in Texas, was a member of a Presbyterian church while going to graduate school. And that was the time when people were coming from Central America due to the civil wars at that time. And I learned about an organization in Michigan that was helping people seek asylum in Canada. And that was because our U.S. laws at that time really said people should be able to seek asylum, but really were not recognizing asylum seekers from Central America. That's the same period when many Presbyterians were involved in the sanctuary movement. And so we were part of what was considered the Overground Railroad. You could work your way up to Canada, apply for asylum in Canada. And that really spoke to me. I had worked on issues of poverty and homelessness prior to that. And then this idea of asylum being really kind of a sense of homelessness at a global scale. All the same kinds of concerns one might have about their livelihood and security when you are without a home in your own country, in your own town, and then multiply that into an international context.
That's great. Maybe this sounds elementary, but I'm not sure it is because I've been having this conversation with some of your colleagues. Maybe help us define terms a little bit, because we talk about migration and immigration and refugees and asylum. And I think it kind of helps all of us to think a little more precisely about what those different terms might mean.
Sure. So migration is really the most global term. That's the most general term. That simply means somebody on the move. In international context, it means somebody who's crossed a border. And people cross borders for lots of reasons, which can include to seek protection, but it can include things like looking for work or to reunify with family members or to seek educational opportunities, right? So migration is that very global term. Within all of the laws around migration, the most specific are around people who actually need safety and protection. And there's an international agreement that if you have to leave your country because you're fearful of either your government persecuting you or that your government is unable to protect you from persecution, that other countries will provide that safety and security. And that right is called the right to seek asylum. And so asylum is the fancy word, the legal term for that kind of protection. Then you say, okay, well, what's the difference between asylum and refugee? Well, asylum is the type of protection, and you become a refugee when you move in order to get that protection. In the United States, we've complicated it further because we actually call people who seek asylum at the border or inside the country, asylum seekers who become asylees. But it really is the same thing. Refugee and asylum seeker is all about whether or not somebody, some government, has recognized your need for protection. And that's why in the news, we hear a lot of these terms thrown back and forth, because we have so many legal commitments, both in our national laws and in our international laws, that if we don't want to accept that responsibility, we can use other terms like migrant or illegal person or things like that as a way to distance the government from having any responsibility.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
I find all of this just really fascinating because I think a lot of people think about, you know, asylum seekers and refugees, but they don't really think about all that, like you said, kind of how granular it can be. It's like being homeless, but now you're also like not a resident of this country, and like being able to obtain like the proper identification and stuff like that, I would imagine gets really tricky and complicated. Plus there's like visa rules and all of that stuff that can get quite messy, I would imagine.
Yeah. And that's one of the big areas of debate, right? You hear things like people should wait in line, or why didn't they come the proper way, or why don't they have papers? And one of the reasons for creating these rules around refugees and asylum seekers is the understanding that if you have to flee, if you have to leave quickly, or if you are fleeing your own government, it's going to be much harder for you to obtain documentation, right? So if I'm trying to leave Ukraine right now in the midst of the war, I might not be able to go to the government office that issues passports. So that's why there's the special rules and exceptions for people that are seeking protection, that it's logical that they might not be able to have passports and visas and those kinds of things. And that's why we created a system that said, you still have access. This is different than somebody who's sitting at home and saying, maybe I'll get a graduate degree in the universe in, you know, United States. Right. That's a whole different situation, which one might plan months or years in advance and have time to go through certain paperwork to make that happen.
So I think we could spend all of our time on kind of policy and the dynamics of the moment, but we really do want to focus on your work and the work of your colleagues, especially around what One Great Hour Sharing support. So I know you've got some highlights to share with us. Tell us kind of what are some important, significant things that are happening in your part of Presbyterian Disaster Assistance.
Thanks, John. The context that we've been talking about is certainly applicable. And one of the main things that we do in the United States is to support the efforts of people on the ground locally, both at the border and also in communities in the interior. And that support shows up in many different ways. One is educational opportunities like this conversation, where we can help people involved in this type of ministry to educate their members of their churches, their community, help them understand why they care about migrants and people in need of protection. Secondly, we're involved in coalitions that do advocacy to protect people who are seeking asylum and refugees, and to encourage financial support, that federal funds go to support those activities. And we do grant making. We do grants through presbyteries and sometimes directly with nonprofit partners who do this work, so that we can actually make sure that there are services available to people, whether it's shelters at the border, other transit centers like the Interfaith Welcome Coalition in San Antonio, and places of reception as well.
So what is something about migration that you wish people knew that they don't know?
That's an excellent question. I think it's not as much what we don't know as what we sometimes forget, perhaps. One of my favorite questions to a church group is, when did people not migrate? Can you tell me a time in history when people did not migrate? And we can't find it. And in our own communities, most of us have some type of migration experience, maybe just across one state to the next. So a lot of what I want people to know or remember is to remember our own histories, to remember the humanity, to be able to see people as individuals and human beings, not just as numbers, and to be able to recognize many of our same hopes and dreams and aspirations are the hopes and dreams and aspirations of the migrants. I think they're, for the most part, people we would be very proud to call friend and neighbor.
So do you have suggestions for congregations if they're feeling a call to get started in this work? What is the best way to get started with this if this is something that your congregation's really passionate about?
PDA loves to help people that are exploring how to get involved. Our own website has resources in terms of educational materials to help congregations to have conversations around this. We have two films that we put together, one on To Breathe Free that is about refugee resettlement, and Locked in a Box that is about immigration detention. We also launched last year a new workshop on discernment. And this is a workshop specifically geared for congregations or groups of congregations trying to discern either how to start a ministry or how to go to the next level in their current ministry. And that's something we offered twice last year. So we're hoping to continue that in the coming year.
That sounds great. So maybe give us some examples of how congregations are connecting with your work.
Sure. The most involvement we have are people who are either providing very direct kind of survival needs. So they're working at reception centers where people are arriving in their community. They're volunteering at shelters or centers like that to provide food or clothing. And the second most common way is some form of sponsorship or accompaniment in which a congregation actually kind of adopts a family of people and actually makes a pretty strong commitment to help them with their housing, to perhaps provide some financial support for daily survival, to assist them in finding work, if there's children, getting the children enrolled in school, all of those kind of activities. Many times this is done with a group of churches or even interfaith, not just one congregation. And so the work of PDA is often to help network people with those existing programs so they can connect up with people in need of those services, as well as networking amongst ourselves. So we just hosted this week a conversation among Presbyterians who are in cities receiving people coming by bus up from the border, and helping them to network around issues of housing and how we as people show up as people of faith in those relationships. So those are a few ways in which congregations get involved and PDA can be a support.
I'm a member of Philadelphia Presbyterian, and certainly colleagues working out of West Kensington Ministry and other places are very active when the buses show up in Philadelphia, which they do on a continual basis. And had I stayed in that work, we were trying to figure out ways for our congregation to get connected with that. So I think there's a perception that you need to be at the border to do this work, but clearly the way things are happening now, that's not the case.
No, that's definitely not the case. And you reminded me, John, some of the ways churches are responding is actually setting up space in their own buildings, converting them into housing. Sometimes PDAs offered some grant support to help with that remodeling or for getting furnishings for the space.
I think it's awesome that there are like some tangible things that churches can do like that. And I think it's great that PDA is there trying to help network everybody, because I think that often churches are kind of at a loss of who else, like unless there's other churches in their presbytery doing things, they're kind of not sure how or who to connect with. So this gives them a really good, I think, jumping off point for folks that are really curious about this.
Yeah, there really are organizations all across the country that are already involved in this work. There are also often immigrant-led groups that are active in almost every community, but our churches often aren't aware of them. And that's part of the networking we try to provide.
No, I think that's terrific. And I think, right, I'll use the word in the common culture right now is immigration. That's the political term. I think it feels like such a big lift that to have entry points for congregations or individuals, and especially to say we don't need to reinvent the wheel, we've got organizations we can work with or other partner congregations in a presbytery to work with, I think gives you some hope that you can actually get involved and make a difference and have an impact, because otherwise it seems like such an insurmountable topic or a topic that's so fraught with kind of political moment that we're not quite sure how to get involved. But I think this is really, to have PDA give us some entry points to this is really, really helpful.
It's true. And what I found is, you know, both people that start from this from a policy perspective and those who start from, I just want to love my neighbor's perspective, find that this way of some kind of hands-on ministry is a wonderful way to connect. It is not only powerful for the people that are being assisted through these services, but it is transformational experiences for the Presbyterians, for the members that get involved.
Well, and I like too that you pointed out that like this is happening in every city across the country. So odds are good it's happening in yours. Now, maybe not if you live in a super, super rural environment potentially, but even then there's probably still some of that going on. And so I think for a lot of churches, there's a lot of opportunities out there for churches to help all kinds of people in their communities, but they have to like open their eyes in a way to like who is actually in their backyard, so to speak, that maybe we've gotten comfortable pretending wasn't there.
Yeah. And Katie, I'm glad you brought up about the rural, because we often think of this as a urban phenomenon, but it actually isn't in the United States. The meatpacking industry has gone specifically after hiring refugees. And so if you live in any community that has any type of meatpacking, whether it's beef, pork, chicken, most likely there are refugees working there. And immigration detention centers like prisons are often in very remote, distant places from urban centers. There are about 300 immigration detention centers around the country, and many, many of them are in very remote locations.
I don't know that that's something most people would think about.
Yeah, there was a study done for PCUSA back in 1999, so a while ago, where we really struggled with this question about who is here and who belongs. And it's kind of a disconnect that we were having between the political debates and the way the name calling and all of that, and the reality that on the ground, people were living as neighbors with each other. Immigrant children were going to school with our children. They were being hired to take care of family members, to take care of yards, right? There was all this integration happening, but we had this disconnect between our rhetoric and between the way we really live our day-to-day lives.
So doing all of this work, how has this role and doing this work impacted you? Because this strikes me as the kind of work that once you start doing it, one, I would imagine it's kind of hard to stop, but also that just you couldn't not do this work and come out of it on the other side the same.
It's really impacted me both from a faith perspective and from my understanding about what it means to be American. I think I took for granted a lot of our freedoms that I had growing up, and I really didn't understand them until you meet people that have had to fight for the right of religion, for the right to speak and, you know, their opinions. Then you start realizing what's at stake and you wonder, you know, would I be able to stand up in the same way? So they've taught me a lot about how to be involved in civic life and encouraged me when I feel discouraged by some of the things going on in the government. I am reminded of the fights that they've taken on, and that encourages me. It certainly has been an amazing faith journey as well, both in terms of the migrants I've met who expressed their own faith journey and how they believed that God was with them on the road and led them here, as well as meeting pastors who I say, well, you know, what got you involved in this? And I'll still never forget one pastor going, well, when Jesus is knocking at your door, you kind of have to open it. And another woman who was like, I don't want to get involved with this mess at the border. I don't want to be in these conversations. And then she came back from meeting a young woman from Central America and said, you know, I just looked in her eyes and, you know, saw God's child. She says, how can I not see God's child in front of me? Those are all very powerful experiences that I've had. And the last thing I'd like to say about that is the sense of abundance. So often the conversation here is around a fear that we don't have enough. And it's amazing to be involved with people who believe in the abundance, and you see it. You see the abundance that migrants themselves are able to bring, you know, coming here with nothing, and churches and individual volunteers who come just with nothing initially and just find this abundance from that experience.
That's great. And that's a steady drumbeat we try to share in our work throughout MES around stewardship, and not only of money, but of all the abundant gifts God shares with us, and how that kind of counters the what feels like a pervasive narrative of scarcity, right? It's what we believe. We believe in abundance, whether it's grace or love or resources or humanity. So to be able to see that in very difficult circumstances is really inspiring, Susan. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, a Haitian Presbyterian pastor many years ago made the comment that, you know, people talk about it being like dividing the pie or something. He says, but we're yeast.
That's very biblical too, right?
So yes.
That's good. Well, I think we're starting to want to, you know, beginning to close this conversation, for which we're really grateful. But we want to make sure other things that you want to share with our listeners as we conclude our time.
Well, first of all, I do want to say how grateful I am for the One Great Hour Sharing offering, because it really has been the way that we have had some steady presence in this work. I remember I used to work for Church World Service, and so I was very aware of the origins of One Great Hour of Sharing, really coming at the time when work with refugees was coming to the fore as an ecumenical response. And so it's been part of my work history, even before coming to PCUSA, but certainly very grateful for the ways in which that offering supports that work. A couple of things I would highlight about coming up is one of the GA overtures that we are working on is to launch a campaign to expand the number of volunteers involved in the legal asylum system. So we have a new mandate to really encourage Presbyterian attorneys and Presbyterians with language skill to volunteer with legal projects that do asylum representation. So we're just in the planning stages of that, but we will be reaching out through mid-councils and through our own broadcasting to really encourage that. And secondly, just to say that we continue to look for ways to network with folks who are receiving asylum seekers and refugees in their communities. We know it's very complicated and confusing, and welcome any contacts to the PDA email or to my personal email, that we might be able to connect you with those services in your community.
Great. Thanks. And I know Katie will drop lots of information in the notes for this, but I would encourage all who are listening and all the people who you know who are listening. We're at the outset of Lent right now, but Lent is going to continue to unfold. By the time you hear this, we'll be even further into Lent. And these questions around hospitality and home and movement and how the Spirit travels with people are really perfect Lenten questions, I think. And we would encourage you, whether your congregation receives it on Palm Sunday or Easter Sunday or some other time, to support One Great Hour Sharing. And you can do that also as an individual on top of your congregational support. And as one who's spending a lot of time in conversations about special offerings right now, the money generated by One Great Hour Sharing really does have a direct impact on our capacity to support the people that Susan's working with, whether it's the people on the move themselves or those seeking to support them. So just a word of thanks for all who support the One Great Hour Sharing. And also, I think, Susan, thanks to you for your work and the work of your colleagues and all the many networks that support it, because it really does. We've been trying to tie people back to the Matthew 25 conversation. And clearly, when Jesus says, "When did we see you?" this is as clear of an answer as you can get to that question, I think, with the people who are showing up, whether it's at our doors or at our borders. So thank you. Thank you for your work and your commitment.
Thank you. And amen to that.
Indeed. Well, I want to ask you the question that we ask everyone who comes onto this podcast, and that is, what is your hope for the church?
My hope is for the church to be a movement of people engaged in the communities, a place where people can be welcomed, a place where people can be safe to have open conversations about the most complex, difficult things going on in our world, and where we see our faith alive all around us.
That's beautiful. Well, Susan, thank you so much for giving us some time today to share more about how you are working with so many people to make migration a little bit more navigable for the people who need it. John, thank you so much for hosting with me today on this episode.
It's always a pleasure, Katie. Always a pleasure.
All right. And we'll see everybody next time. We hope you enjoyed today's episode on Between Two Pulpits. Make sure you check out the show notes for links to all of the different resources that were mentioned throughout this episode. If you like what you heard today, then consider supporting us by subscribing to the Between Two Pulpits podcast and leave a review, because that helps other people find us. You can also share this podcast with others who you think might enjoy it. Finally, I want to say thank you for listening, and go in peace.